Please enjoy this Sport Bloke segment from an upcoming or recent episode.
So, Shuey, we'll skip ahead with Game 6. Philly handled their business in Atlanta. It was an impressive effort. It was a lights-out effort when the bloody stadium lights turned off with 2 minutes left in a one-point game, if I'm not mistaken.
When do you see that happening, let alone 2 minutes left in an elimination
not
game?
Not good timing.
Like, it was crazy. I think Trae Young just hit a three from memory as well. So he literally shot the lights out.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I must admit, I haven't watched that game yet, and I will go back and watch it. But we've got to, let's just go straight ahead to Game 7. What a crazy series this has been. One of the most bizarre series I can remember in recent history. Philly lost three home games. Three home games.
Well, more importantly, Atlanta won three.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Won three away.
That is true. But Philly were the higher seed.
Yeah.
So, look, it was a close and gritty first half, but Philadelphia would have been happy. Trae Young only had 9 points on 1 of 12 shooting at halftime. So they had him pretty under control at that point. They would have been thinking, okay, things are looking okay at this stage. But, well, what can we say? Ben Simmons was a major reason why it turned to shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can look at his series as an entirety. You can look at each game individually. Very similar reading, and it doesn't read well. I mean, the big issue, I guess, has to revolve around the free throw shooting and his lack of willingness to take them.
And it all comes back to that, doesn't it? Because I think the issue here is mental. And he is so afraid of being fouled that he was just so passive. He would do nothing.
Yeah.
He wasn't even shooting shots in the fourth quarter, and you've got a great stat on that.
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, the first play that everyone has put under the microscope, he's backing down on Danilo Gallinari, drop step to the baseline. He's
lovely turn.
A wide open dunk. He would throw that down every time.
Yep.
Except for then.
Yeah.
Trae Young rotating across, a guy who is about what? I don't know. 30 kilos lighter than him.
And several inches shorter than him.
And he passes up to Matisse Thybulle.
Yep.
And you could see the footage of Joel Embiid at the three-point line with that what the hell sort of look. Why are you doing that? And he's talking to him afterwards. But yeah, the fourth quarter is a massive issue. He didn't attempt a single field goal in the fourth quarters of the last four games in that series.
And he was 3 of 3 overall for the entire series in fourth quarters.
Yeah.
And they were all in the first three games, as you say.
Yeah. So when you've got a guy who is arguably the second best player on your team who is earning that sort of money to take four field goal attempts in an elimination game, that's a huge problem.
It's not good enough. And you can't pass up that dunk because he would have made the dunk. So even if he'd missed the and one, he still would have got the 2 points.
Yeah. So this is the problem, though, that it creates is because he's not willing to get in that situation where he could be fouled.
Yeah.
And look, Atlanta used the Hacker Simmons really well in some of the previous games. There was one game I can remember he went, 4 of 14?
Well, it's for good reason.
Yeah. Well, what was he, 25 of 73 in the entire series?
The lowest free throw shooting percentage in NBA playoff history with a minimum of 70 attempts. His 34.2, worse than Shaq's 37.4 and Wilt's 38 in previous seasons.
So absolutely hideous. And so obviously the result of that is, what do you do in a close game? You put him on the bench.
Yep. Well, they had to.
And it happened.
Yep.
So, you know, some of these games where you had Furkan Korkmaz playing in the fourth quarter down the stretch with Ben Simmons watching from the sidelines. Like, it cannot happen. A guy who is I don't want to say perennial all-star, but in his young career, he's been an all-star several times. He's a guy that LeBron James wanted on his all-star team. That's how good he is and how highly he's regarded around the league.
Well, I think he was thinking he could pass the torch to Simmons because he was probably the most like him in the body and skill set-wise, you know?
Yeah, but the problem is that Ben had just passed the torch straight away to someone else
instead of
running.
Yeah, that's right. He's not shooting that torch.
No, he's not. So, yeah, look, this is a huge issue. I would be utterly shocked if we saw Ben Simmons in a Philly uniform again.
Oh, Stewie, I've got a StatMuse stat that absolutely sums it up. Udonis Haslem took more shots in the only quarter he played this season, which was 2 shots in 3 minutes and a big punch.
And 100% from the field.
Than Ben did in the last 6 fourth quarters, 1 shot in 44 minutes.
Not good reading.
Oh.
Unless you're a Udonis Haslem fan.
It's astonishing Philly even got this to 7 games, given they choked away 2 games at home prior to this third one. So they choked 3 home games in the series.
And I think you told me, what was it, 99.1% chance they were going to win Game 5?
On the ESPN predictor, yeah. Oh, the percentages have been higher at various stages throughout those games.
Hmm.
And the whole thing leaves you scratching your head. The other thing I think we need to talk about is, was he thrown under the bus, and is it all his fault? So he's definitely been scapegoated. He'll be lynched out of the city of Philadelphia almost. This is, of course, the city that famously booed Santa Claus once. So they're not very forgiving people.
This is the city that booed Destiny's Child because one of their members was wearing a Kobe Bryant jersey at the All-Star game.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough, I think.
Kobe's from Philly. I know. Okay, admittedly, it was a Lakers jersey, but still, like come on.
That's they're unforgiving. But does he deserve all the blame? So Embiid, for example, he's the first player to have 8 turnovers in back-to-back playoff games since 1984. He wasn't perfect either. And he, in his press conference, kind of threw Ben under the bus and said that that dunk was the turning point of the game. Now, first of all, I don't know how it can be a turning point when you're losing. Normally, a turning point is when things change. But anyway.
Also, he didn't kind of throw him under the bus. He drove the bus.
Oh, yeah, he did. He did. But he himself had a really key turnover when he did that little spin and lost his handle only a few minutes after that dunk. Well, so,
I mean, he has been pretty average in the fourth quarter. And it was quite funny. Christian Petrarca from the Melbourne Demons.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
He was very, very quick to back up Ben Simmons. He is friends with Ben. They played a lot of junior basketball together. You know, great to see him jumping in there and say, well, hang on a second, big fella. You had all these turnovers. You weren't clutch for most of the series. Maybe look at your own backyard first, which is a great point.
It is a great point. Now, admittedly, he had very good numbers and he was playing on a torn meniscus in his knee. So Embiid did do a great job throughout the course of the series and the playoffs. But that's an interesting point you bring up, Petrarca, because I've been keeping a close eye on Twitter and Reddit to see the pulse of Australian fans. And most people were defending Ben, sometimes
too much,
which is what makes the Olympic decision so disappointing for a lot of people, I think. And it's really interesting to see on Reddit today that tide's turned. Mm. So a lot of those people are off him. A lot of people are off him.
Yeah. But then the other one we saw was their coach, Doc Rivers, was very, very quick. So he was asked whether he thought Philadelphia could win a championship with Ben Simmons playing point guard. And his answer was something along the lines of, I don't think I can give you an answer to that right now.
So he was taking tickets to the bus that was running him over.
Yeah, exactly.
He wasn't driving it. Embiid was driving it and Doc was taking the tickets.
Doc was doing all the luggage, throwing the luggage underneath.
Yeah, wearing a little hat.
Yeah, we had a fancy little hat. So, yeah, not a great combination from your star player and the coach. I was listening to The Real Ones with Rajah Bell, and I tell you what, it's tough to listen to. These guys are the guys that are supposed to have his back, and this is what Rajah was saying. And Logan Murdoch was saying the exact same thing. Like, these are the two guys that should be backing him up. So,
These are conversations that should be happening behind closed doors.
Yeah.
You don't throw guys under the bus in the aftermath of a heartbreaking loss.
Yeah. Okay, you're emotional, we get it, but play a straight bat.
Yeah. And absolutely.
Deal with it later on.
What do you make of Shaq's comments? If he was in my locker room, I would have knocked his ass out.
Well, I would believe that because this is coming from the same Shaquille O'Neal who once choked out Gordon Giracek like 15 minutes before the Suns were supposed to be playing.
So, I forget about that story.
So, yeah, I'd believe that from Shaq. I mean, he's there basically to make those sorts of ridiculous calls.
Yeah, he is, in fairness. You're right.
But no, as I say, I think what we should do is talk about Doc Rivers a little bit.
Yeah, more. Well, we do need to. He has 29 losses with a chance to clinch a playoff series. The most losses by a coach in NBA history. That 34 winning percentage is the worst all-time amongst coaches with 20-plus games in that situation.
And it gets worse. He's got 9 Game 7 losses in his career. 9?
Yep.
That is a huge amount.
A number of chokes.
And 5 of them are at home.
Yeah, okay.
5 of them at home. That's not cool. Pat Riley is in second place with 2.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, I think sometimes Doc Rivers might have been given a little bit too much credit for the fact that he was a part of the championship in Boston. I mean, he inherited just this golden team that did sensationally well. But when you look at some of the other teams that he's had in Los Angeles with the Clippers,
they were a pretty built team when he came to the team.
And they never made the conference finals until this year when he'd already gone. So, you know, I'm not saying that Doc is an overrated coach because he's a very, very good coach. But at the same time, like players can choke in the clutch, I think Doc as a coach sometimes doesn't do as good a job.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have been criticizing his substitution patterns and that sort of thing. So, absolutely.
As I say, it's very, very easy for him to throw Ben under the bus. But, I mean, at the same time, the Sixers might be looking to move off him soon.
Well, so he has run it back a bit on the Ben Simmons comment. So he's saying that I believe that we can do the right work to bring him up to where he needs to be.
That should have been the answer in the first place.
Yes. Yes, it should
have. Absolutely should have been.
It should have. Yeah. It should have. So I remember I watched every LSU game I could get my hands on when Ben Simmons played college there. And there were periods of games where his teammates would just freeze him out because I think they were jealous of him. They were jealous of the fanfare, particularly the guy who was kind of the star of the team before Ben joined. I forget his name. He never made the NBA. And I kind of initially thought that it was just, okay, he's playing with dud teammates that don't know a good thing when they're onto one. But I now wonder if it was a personality trait. He's very passive. He turned down lanes to the basket. Kenny's breakdown at halftime was really good, actually. He showed some really key points where Ben fell down, even in the first half, let alone the second half, before the, you know, the non-dunk and all this other stuff happened. He just doesn't have that killer instinct, does he?
Well, certainly not at this stage, no.
Yeah.
But look, full credit to the Hawks. I mean, we've got to remember that it wasn't the Sixers necessarily losing this. The Hawks came in there and they took it.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Trae Young, as I mentioned, probably around this time last year when I first saw him play, he's Allen Iverson-like, isn't he? He plays with a chip on his shoulder. He's got balls of steel. He's a good star to have on your team in the playoffs.
He is. And look, he'll always be indelibly linked to Luka Doncic, who
of course, yep,
gets all the fanfare because of what he does. But, I mean, this is a guy who is in his first playoff run, and he's averaged 29 and 11 assists a game in a seven-game series against the number one seed.
And the only other player to do that is Oscar Robertson.
So not a bad
pretty player. Good company. Yeah.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Eight straight games of 20-plus points, 7-plus assists, which is a new postseason record.
He could win a championship before Doncic.
He could. He's a very, very good chance. So, yeah, I mean, this team is just playing great ball. But the interesting part about this, if you go back a season, Trae Young was just basically all about the three-point game.
Yeah.
It was three-point.
Well, he's Steph Curry replicant.
Yeah, it was threes and layups.
Yeah.
His game, and I know we talk about this a lot, but his game has evolved.
The playmaking.
At almost the exact same rate that his likability. So if you go back a couple of seasons, it kind of looked like the Hawks players didn't enjoy playing with him.
Mm.
Now it's like everyone wants to be a part of this team. And you know, guys that are going into free agency next season, like that, Atlanta would be a place you would want to go.
Hotlanta, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. That team.
Yeah.
They do have a pretty interesting conversation to be had with John Collins afterwards about his extension, whether they give him the money that...
How was the T-shirt he was wearing in the press conference? Did you see that?
No, I didn't see it.
It was a picture of him dunking on Embiid from an earlier game. I can't remember which game it was. But he was wearing that T-shirt to his press. Yeah, talk about trolling.
That's like reminiscent of the Bam Adebayo.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
But no, as I say, like I've loved.
I do like him.
I've loved watching this team. And look, Kevin Huerter.
We haven't even talked about him yet.
I mean, he came out of nowhere.
He did a bit of a Tyler Hero from last playoffs, didn't he?
Yeah, a little bit.
Just caught fire. Wow. And he has an incredible handle. I didn't realize how good his handle was. He was dribbling all over the place, through his legs, behind his back. Very impressive.
It's a deceptive handle. It's one that you wouldn't expect him to have, definitely. But look, he's got a great range. It's just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he knocked down that three ball.
I don't think he's really been put under a microscope until now because he's playing in Atlanta.
Yeah, and I must confess that prior to the playoffs, I hadn't seen a hell of a lot of Atlanta games this season, as I've mentioned previously when we've talked. So,
but this kind of goes back to what you were saying last week about people saying, oh, Nikola Jokic is not an MVP candidate. At the same time as they're thinking, I don't watch any Denver Nuggets games.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Atlanta and Trae Young, is that people don't really understand how good Atlanta is because it's Atlanta. They were supposed to be irrelevant this year.
Yep.
And for the first half of the season, they were.
And most people had the Knicks beating them in the first round like we did.
Yep, that's it. Yep. So they've been phenomenal. I mean, ever since Nate McMillan came in, we will be the first ones to admit we kind of got that wrong. We didn't really know how much that was going to shift the needle, but...
Well, and again, the Bogdanović injury, him coming back was a big deal too, but the numbers are pretty stark. 14 and 20 when McMillan took over, 35 and 15 since, including two series wins over higher seeds.
And I think the most disgusting thing about that is that he's still the interim coach.
Yes.
Give that man a contract, for God's sake.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Like, what's it going to take?
And I dare say, you mentioned John Collins' contract. He's helping his case.
Oh, absolutely. Playing great ball. And look, they're getting timely efforts off the bench from the guys like Lou Williams. you know, you're getting a little bit coming out from Bogdanovic and Gallinari and these other guys. So, like, they're getting good performances by their role players. And I think this is why this team has been so successful.
Well, let's talk about their upcoming opponents, Chewy. So, we've got the Bucks and Nets, who had two games since we last recorded. The Bucks handled Game 6. They did their job at home. And then we had Game 7 at Brooklyn, one for the absolute ages, wasn't it? Cracker.
Well, so Game 6, put simply, was that Milwaukee made all the adjustments that we talked about in the last episode.
Yes, that's true.
They put Giannis on to Kevin Durant. Durant was ineffective against Giannis. I don't think he had a single field goal going up against him.
Can I tell you a stat on that?
Of course.
So, Shuri, check out this little chart I've got here. It's got Durant defenders, field goal percentage allowed as closer defender in the last 8 seasons. Tristan Thompson is the worst at 70%. And then it goes along the way. Jimmy Butler's around 50%. Chris Paul's around 45%. Giannis, top of the list, 40%. Why weren't they playing him on him from game one?
Holy shit. Trevor Ariza's second?
Yeah, Wesley Johnson, Tayshaun Prince. There's some interesting names there.
There are some very interesting ones in there. That is crazy. Yeah, that was a great adjustment. Giannis stopped shooting the three as well. It was the first playoff game in 3 seasons that he didn't attempt a single three-pointer.
Yep.
So he's getting to the basket.
Yep.
I think he had, 30 and 17. So, yeah, look, some huge adjustments they made there. Chris Middleton went ballistic, 38 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, 5 three-pointers.
He was excellent on the defensive end. He was fantastic on the, particularly near the end. Very good.
James is the first player since 1974 to record back-to-back 5 steal games in the playoffs.
Yeah, right.
Nuts.
Yeah.
So, look, Game 6, a huge, huge adjustment by the Bucks. But, yeah, Game 7 obviously was what it was all about. A couple of quick things. The first Game 7 road win in Bucks history. And the first overtime Game 7 since the Spurs and Mavs in 2006.
Well.
But if Kevin Durant wore a size 17 shoe instead of a size 18, we'd be talking about a whole different result.
And there. It was an amazing shot, like turnaround, fadeaway. It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I did the whole full well knowing that he was going to hit it.
Yep.
Because I was so torn. I wanted the Bucks to win, but I picked Brooklyn. So I'm kind of I knew it was going down. The one in overtime was ugly, though.
He played 48 minutes. I think he was knackered.
He played 53 minutes.
He played all of regulation, To be honest, their best player in overtime was Brown. He was. He was their best player in overtime. Like, unfortunately, Durant had just run out of steam. And it's really interesting to hear some of the commentary. So I haven't listened to any NBA podcast for a couple of weeks, actually. But I've listened to Bill Simmons recently, and they reckon that that's why he went for that big shot at the end of regulation, because they needed to go for the win there because they just had nothing in the tank.
Yeah. How disappointing when you go for the win and you're not even taking the right shot.
Well, there was only a 5 combined field goal attempts from both benches combined.
Wow.
That's the fewest since starters were first tracked in playoff games in 1970-71.
Holy crap.
So it's no wonder they were knackered.
Yeah. Look, this whole series just comes down to too much being put on Durant's shoulders. You're talking about no Irving, minimal James Harden.
Harden certainly got better I didn't watch Game 6. Game 7, Harden certainly looked a lot better than Game 5.
He certainly gave the effort, which is the important thing. I
thought he looked better. His stat line was better too.
Full credit to him for even cutting it out. Most people would have sat that out, but...
Yeah. And he did benefit from 5 points from bullshit fouls in the first quarter. Well, so he started very well. He started very well. Yeah.
But then you tack on Joe Harris. I mean, this is the NBA's league-leading 3-point shooter at 47%.
He had a shocker.
And he shot 24% from 3 in the last 5 games of the series. Yeah. So it's not a great thing. Look, I don't think they did anything wrong. It was just, unfortunately, they weren't able to get past the injuries. And I think they're capable of coming back and winning a title next season if they run it back with the same line.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
And there's a feeling of inevitability with super teams. You know, LeBron's first Miami try didn't work.
True.
So they will. I'm glad they didn't win this one, because they probably will win one. And I do want them to have a little bit of...
heartache and
failure. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Adversity. Only the 7th overtime game 7 in NBA history.
Hmm.
But I think the supporting cast was really key. So Brook Lopez played really strong D down the stretch, a couple of big blocks, had one big one on Durant. Middleton was excellent on D at the end. Excellent. Drew Holiday didn't have a great shooting game, but at the end of the game when...
He hit the three that counted.
Yeah, and he hit another little layup there too. So he hit some big shots down the stretch at the end of regulation. There were no field goals between the 1:54 mark left in the fourth and the 1:12 mark left in OT. So they clearly were running on fumes, both teams, by the end of it.
It was one of those overtimes that was ugly to watch, but it was so intense at the same time. So, look, cracking series, cracking game seven. Congratulations to the Bucks.
Couple of other quick observations for me. The PJ Tucker exchange with KD's mum was pretty damn funny when KD was at the line and Tucker was talking to KD's mum who was sitting courtside, and then KD cracked a little smile. It was such... If it was a regular season game, you'd be like, okay, but it was late stage of a game seven. It was such a weird interaction, but it was lovely. It's that human stuff that you really like. But how's this for a theory, Stewie? So Giannis has taken a long time at the line the whole playoffs to the point where they started counting him.
12.
Yeah, they started. Well, this is where I'm going. So they started counting him in the Miami series, and he actually got timed out on a couple of free throws on the Miami series. Now, one of the reasons for his free throw shooting woes, in my opinion, was a lack of routine. But them counting him, and I can't remember who was commentating. Was it Grant Hill?
I think it was Marv Albert and Grant Hill.
Grant Hill said on a number of occasions, they're playing him into form at the free throw line. Yeah. And it was true. Do you know why? Because he was shooting on 12 every time.
Yeah.
So he went from having no routine at the line to them giving him a routine. So he actually hit 7 in a row at one point because he was shooting on 12.
All of which are violations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, because they were counting quicker than a clock.
Well, I don't think they were counting that much quicker.
No, they weren't, because I used my stopwatch.
Ah.
So when they got to 12, it was 10.59 on my stopwatch.
Still over 10.
So picks for Atlanta and Milwaukee.
I mean, I want to say Atlanta, but I just can't. It comes down to this. Who the hell is going to stop Giannis?
Yeah.
Like, Milwaukee have guys that can slow Trey down a little bit. Their shot blocking at the back with Giannis and Brook Lopez is going to make it harder than what New York and Philly's made it. I think the Hawks can still get two, but I've gone with Milwaukee in six.
Me too. I think that Milwaukee probably should win in four or five, but because of my lack of faith in Budenholzer, because Giannis does weird things with shooting threes when he should be taking it to the rack, because Middleton and Holiday have been a little bit up and down, I'll say Milwaukee in 6-2.
Cool.
On the other side of the draw, we have more crazy games. The Clippers and Utah. The Clippers got through in six, even after Kawhi didn't play the last two games. What the hell is going on?
All right, I want to start this off by saying that the Utah Jazz are the most frustrating team in the NBA. Rudy Gobert is 7'1". He has a 7'9" wingspan. He's massive. He is a strong guy. The number of times Utah would use a pick and roll to get Gobert's man onto Donovan Mitchell or Mike Conley.
Well, Conley wasn't playing much, but...
But later in the series. Yeah. And then they're leaving the likes of Pat Beverly, who's 6'1", or Terrence Mann, who's 6'5", inside on Gobert, and the Jazz use that advantage to jack up a three. Drives me nuts. If he played with Chris Paul, Rudy Gobert would average 20 a
game. Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely. He'd get 10 points on lobs every game.
Easy.
Yeah.
So,
But they small-balled Utah into submission, let's face it.
Absolutely. But the problem is, like, if you look at some of the numbers, it talks about how far over-dependent they are with the three. So in game five, the Jazz took 80 shots from the field. 54 of them were from three.
Well, it's their strategy is to just get threes. Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't even much better in game six. 85 shots for 44 threes. And it's frustrating because Donovan Mitchell is an awesome player. His numbers show that he is an amazing player. He had 39 points, 9 three-pointers, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists in game six. First player ever to do that in the playoffs.
And he was a bit banged up too. He went to the bench a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're playing against a small ball team. It's like, if you're not going to use Gobert on offense, then he's wasted.
Yeah.
Because you've got guys like Nick Batum, Marcus Morris. They can just drag him out to the three-point line, which, you know, gives these other guys a really, really good run in. I mean, Reggie Jackson got to the rim a couple of times.
We haven't talked about Reggie Jackson yet. He's been excellent all playoffs for the Clips.
He has.
Excellent.
He everyone forgets how good a finisher he is at the rim. Obviously,
and he's got supreme confidence too.
Yeah, obviously he's a good three-point shooter. He kind of always has been going back to the OKC and Detroit days. But, I mean, shit. Like, if you ain't going to use Gobert on defense, you may as well go small ball and match up with him.
Mm.
That's what I'm getting at. So, yeah, look, Reggie Jackson was phenomenal. I mean, Terrence Mann, we've got to talk about his effort.
Yeah, his game six, Shuey, was quite remarkable. So he scored 10 of the first 12 Clippers points, leading Mike Breen to say, "It's a man explosion out there."
Oh,
and I think of Borat talking out. About, you know.
get out the mops. Oh, dear.
But I don't know. Look, I don't know if it's because I knew the result before I watched the game, or it was the energy of the crowd, or what it was. Perhaps the way these playoffs have been going, where there's been no safe lead. Even when they were down 25, I still felt like the Clips could win.
Yeah.
And I did have the benefit of knowing they did win. So maybe that did. But it was really weird. Even though Utah smashed ahead at the end of the first half and the start of the third, you still had this feeling, you know? You had this feeling.
Well, I was watching it live, and when it got down to about 16, you knew it was coming.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because every offense, Utah would come down, jack up a three, and then come straight back down. The Clippers would get a wide-open look because, again, they've got guys that Gobert's matched up with on the defensive end who are really good three-point shooters. And it was like, right, if Gobert comes running out at that, he's leaving a wide-open shooter in the corner. And Terrence Mann was the big beneficiary.
Oh, yeah.
7 of 10 from three in that game. I mean, he had 20 points in the third quarter, which is a Clippers playoff record.
It's his career high in NBA or college.
Yeah.
Only in a playoff closeout game.
He only had 25 as his previous career high in the NBA.
Yeah.
So
he had a great tip dunk in the first quarter. But, I mean, the first half, I mean, Jordan Clarkson had 17 consecutive Utah points and 19 in the half.
That's because he doesn't pass the ball.
Well, yeah, true. But so, yeah, as you say, the Clips scored 40 in the third, 20 by a man. They erased a whole 25 deficit in one quarter.
Well, I mean, if you look at just the three-pointers alone, the Jazz were 9 of 24 in the second half. Pretty decent number. Not talking horrific. It's sort of high 30s. The Clippers were 14 of 19.
Yeah, well, they outscored the Jazz by 34 in the second half, which is the fourth best second half points differential in NBA history.
So there you go.
But they shot 71.4% in the second half.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder they came back.
It's hard to win games when you're giving up that sort of percentage, and that's why the Clippers won. So
you've talked previously, Stewie, about teams having a crack at the final that haven't really been in the running for a really long time, which is great for the game. The Clippers have broken the longest US drought of seasons without a conference finals appearance at 50.
Mm.
For the record, the Hornets 31, the Blue Jackets 20, the Texans 19, and the Pelicans 19. The other crazy thing was it's only Atlanta's second. They never made a conference final with Dominic Wilkins, Kevin Willis, Doc Rivers, Spud Webb, that team?
No.
Wow.
Because they're always running into
the Celtics and the Pistons.
The Celtics, the Pistons, Jordan's Bulls, yeah, the Knicks with Ewing.
Yeah. It still surprises me a little, though. I know that they had that awesome game between Wilkins and Bird, but I think that was a second round game where they had that massive
duel. Yeah, where Bird went for 60.
And Wilkins went for 50 something, I think. Yeah. Or 49 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not surprised they didn't make it because that Eastern Conference was stacked back in the
I don't know. It wasn't a terrible Hawks team, though. Like
it wasn't, but
yeah. Anyway, okay, we got to tip this one. Phoenix and the Clippers.
Yeah, so look, we tipped this before game one, obviously. I really wanted to pick Phoenix. Even though Kawhi Leonard's out, I feel like Chris Paul was a slightly bigger loss, even though he probably brings a lot more consistency and clarity to what he does.
And we didn't say much about that last week because of time constraints. So Chris Paul has COVID. He missed game one in COVID protocols. Yep. He will almost certainly miss game two.
He will miss game
two tomorrow for the same reason. Right.
But Leonard's out for game two as well. So
I reckon Leonard might be done for the series, man.
It's possible.
Marcus Morris is in serious doubt for tomorrow too. Look, he's hurt a knee.
I had the Clippers in six. I still think the Clippers will get game two. You got to look at this. Devin Booker had a 40-point triple-double in game one. And the Clippers still nearly won it.
Yeah. I haven't watched that game yet, admittedly, but
just quickly on that as well, random stat for you. The only other player in Suns playoff history with a 40-point triple-double is Charles Barkley in 1993.
Oh, they were talking about it on the TNT halftime report, yeah.
This is also a home game, and the Suns also won that 120-114.
Wow.
How crazy is that?
That is crazy.
How crazy is that?
Yeah, that is crazy.
So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I hope I'm wrong because I want to see Phoenix play Milwaukee or Atlanta. I would love to see the Suns make it.
I think we're on a collision course for a Bucks-Suns NBA Finals. Look, I've picked against them in rounds one and two. I'm not making that mistake again. I'm going to take the Suns in seven. They're shooting at historic percentages. I am really worried about Kawhi missing for the entire playoffs, if not a few games. So, I'll pick the Suns.
I hope you're right. Just quickly, though, to close this one out, Rajon Rondo and the Clippers remain the only chance to continue that ridiculous streak that a teammate of Shaquille O'Neal has been involved in the finals every year since Greg Kite in the 1983-84 season.
That's nuts.
It's ridiculous. So, yeah, that's the only reason I would even want the Clippers to get through. But
we'll keep an eye on that one.
We will.
So there's still tons going on, Stewie. We can't possibly cover it all. The NBA draft lottery is tomorrow. We will quickly talk about the Kemba Walker trade.
So, yeah, pretty decent sized trade. Dare I say, the first of many for OKC and Boston in this offseason.
OKC have 18 first and second round picks in the next 7 years. Yeah, I know, but given what's happened with the process in Philly, is this a good thing? Anyway, we'll see.
I stand by my laugh. So, yeah, Oklahoma City get Kemba Walker, the 16th pick in the 2021 draft and the 2025 second-round draft pick. Boston gets Al Horford, Moses Brown, and a 2023 second-round pick. As an OKC fan, I don't particularly love giving up Moses Brown. He looks like a pretty good young defensive player. As a center, though, that's exactly what Boston needs. But, look, another first-rounder to add to the collection. And Kemba Walker, a guy when fit, still a top 10 point guard in the league. So, a very, very good player. So it's going to be an interesting move.
We all know what Brad Stevens thinks of him, though, because the rumor is when Ainge was going to trade for him, Brad Stevens said, no, we don't want him. And of course, the first thing Brad Stevens does when he takes over from Ainge is he gets rid of Kemba Walker.
Thank you, Brad Stevens.
Could we see Rick Carlisle coaching the Celtics?
Well, he played there. So
be a decent destination for him.
That'd be great. Yeah, he played in Beantown in some of those championships.
Yeah, teams, yeah. So on the bench, stuck on the bench there. Yep. We will look at all that stuff in the coming weeks.
Thanks for listening to this Sport Blokes segment. Why not listen to the full episode and check out their Twitter @SportBlokes.